Usha, the language of existence, talks on Zen, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 5.
Beloved Bhagwan, Ture said, if you want to be free from this world of suffering, first you must contemplate impermanence. Those who are born must inevitably die. Even the young are not exempt. Even the strong are in danger. Even a long life does not last more than 80 years or so. If you don't annihilate the nature of affliction somehow and arrive on the path of liberation, even if you ascend to the rank of sovereign of a nation, great minister, deity, spirit, or wizard, it is still evanescent as lightning and morning dew, lasting only for a while. When conditions meet, everything surely seems to exist, but when the conditions disintegrate, emptiness. This body is gained through the relationship of father and mother and comes from their conditions. Solidity becomes skin, flesh, ligament, and bone. Fluidity becomes spittle, tears, pus, and blood. Heat becomes warmth and flexibility. Air becomes breath and movement. When these four conditions suddenly are exhausted, the body gets cold and the breath stops. There is nothing called me. At that time, this body is really not our own. It is only a temporary imp. How can we be so greedily attached to this temporary imp that we ignore eternity? Contemplating these four transcendences, impermanence, suffering, emptiness, selflessness, seeking the way of enlightenment is called the teaching of four realities for disciples. This is the essential gateway to beginning entry into the way for all enlightened ones.
Minister, before I discuss today's serious thing, I have to introduce two new animal gods into Abhirbhava's Museum of Gods. Before I call her, I will have to tell you something about these gods. She is the male. She is known as Zen and has been a symbol of numerous gods. Osiris and Amon-Ra of Egypt were both worshipped as the ram. The ram was sacrificed each year in Egypt. it was skinned, and the skin placed over an image of the god. Recalling the time when Amon Ra was incarnated in the form of a whale, it, in ancient Egypt, apes were considered sacred and were preserved by embalming them at death. Mouse, one of the greatest of the Greek gods, Apollo, was known to take the form of a mouse in his role as sender of the flood. Apollo, the sun god, would incarnate as mice and red to dispel the forces of night. Heart. In Hinduism, the 10th incarnation of Vishnu is a white heart, Kalki. It has not yet happened. 9 incarnations have happened. The 10th is awaited. The 10th will be called Kalki. It will be a white heart. Who is to come to judge the world at the end of this yuga? The 4th and the last cycle of 1,800,000 years in the Hindu concept of the world. He will destroy the wicked, reward the good, and enable Vishnu to create a new world. It seems the time for Kalki is coming near. Beware of the white heart. Bull. In ancient Persia, the bull was worshipped as the god who caused the grass to grow. In Greece, the great god Zeus used the guise of a bull to seduce Europa, hoping thereby that his animal transformation would elude his ever watchful wife. Hera, from detecting his adultery, the followers of Dionysius would kill a bull during midsummer festivals in honor of the great god Zeus. The Museum of Gods is not just a museum. It shows how human mind has remained retarded. Rather than bringing consciousness to its height, he has been worshipping all kinds of animals. Even the future, the final incarnation of God in Hinduism, Kalki, is going to be a white heart, not a man, not a Buddha. It shows the retardedness, the primitiveness of our intelligence. This museum will be a symbol to the whole world to remind them what your forefathers have been doing, what you are doing, and you call it religion. before I asked Avirbhava to bring her new acquirement, two little jokes about these gods. Late one night, Satan, the devil, and his partner Lucifer, the monkey, knocked on the door of Pope the Pollock's Vatican apartment. The Pollock Pope comes to the door with an arm around his best friend, Simon the Sheep. "Good evening, your phoniness," says the devil. Grinning cheekily and fondling his forked tail, "My friend and I were wondering, do you have any midget nuns in your apartment?" "Certainly not," snaps back the Pope, trying to slam the door. "Well, then, Holy Father," chuckles the devil, licking the flames of his lips and jamming his pitchfork in the doorway, "do you have any midget nuns living in the Vatican?" "I don't know of any," cries the frightened Pope the Pollock. "Perhaps," giggles Lucifer, "the monkey swinging from Satan's pitchfork, you know of any midget nuns living anywhere?" "I cannot say," shouts Pope the Pollock, infuriated, "that I know of any midget nuns anywhere at all." And he grabs Simon the Sheep's crucifix and waves it widely under the devil's nose. The devil picks up the monkey by the shoulders, lifts him in the air and shakes him high. "You see, you idiot," shouts Satan, "I told you, you fucked a penguin." Pope the Pollock goes for a summer retreat into the mountains of Italy. He lives in a little stone cottage, and the only companions he has are a flock of sheep. After a few days, without any company, the Pollock Pope becomes crazy for sex. And he chooses one of the harmed sheep as a partner. He takes off his gown and puts his machinery into the sheep. But while he is in action with the poor animal, it suddenly starts to run. Pope the Pollock, with his underwear down around his ankles, is unable to do anything but hold on to the sheep's horns. They race down the mountainside together past a field where Grandma Pickle is picking daisies. Grandma is a little short-sighted, but looks up in amazement as the sheep and the Pollock Pope go racing past. "My God," he mutters to himself, no money to buy friends, but he is driving a white motorbike. Now, Avirbhava, bring your drive. Today is not a master, but he is certainly a great teacher, and I have chosen him so that you can make a clear-cut distinction between the greatest teacher and the smallest master. Even the smallest master, the humblest master, has a duty. It took a realization. He may not say a single word, but his silence is scripture. The greatest teacher may know all the scripture, may have great interpretation, but he remains a spirit. What he says, he does not know. His saying is dependent on his learning, studying, but not on his experience, not on his existential approach to his own being. Today is a good example of a great teacher. But such teachers can deceive humanity. They have been deceiving because they talk beautifully. Their words are the same as the words of the Master, sometimes more refined, more cultivated, more cultured, but still they are empty. Once in a while they may quote a sentence which has significance, not because of them, but that sentence has come down from some great living master. They have been great collectors. But as far as their own reality is concerned, they are as ignorant as one can be. So they said, if you want to be free from the world of suffering, first you must contemplate impermanence. I have told you these words, concentration, contemplation, meditation, and the fourth, which is missing in English language, dhyan, or zen in Japanese. Contemplation is the way of the philosopher. He thinks over. It is not beyond mind. It is within mind. He may be very sophisticated. His words may be arranged beautifully. But he cannot understand what meditation is. He can only understand contemplation. The very word contemplation means thinking about higher things. But if you don't know those things, what you can think about? Contemplation is one of the most empty words. If you know, you know. There is no need to contemplate. If you don't know, how can you contemplate? What you are going to contemplate? What is going to be your subject matter? You are simply groping in darkness and call it contemplation. He certainly is acquainted with the scriptures, very well acquainted, but is committing the same mistake millions of teachers around the world have committed. First, if you want to be free from this world of suffering, can you find a person who does not want to be free from suffering? There is no question about it. Everybody wants to get rid of suffering, misery. The way that Torrey suggests, first you must contemplate impermanence. It won't help. You can think everything is impermanent. Birth is impermanent. Youth is impermanent. Wealth is impermanent. Life itself is running out. Everything is impermanent. That does not mean it will take you out of suffering. It simply makes you more aware that while the time is, enjoy as much as you can, because time is passing and death is not far away. Strangely enough, the same argument is given by Charvaka, the Indian atheist. They say everything is fleeting, so don't waste time in temples, in rituals. Just eat, drink, and be merry. And if you don't have money, borrow money, because after death everyone is finished. Nobody is going to ask his money after death. In the graveyard everybody sleeps soundly. The man who borrowed the money and the man who gave the money both are dead. So don't miss a single moment. Enjoy it, even if it is to be enjoyed on borrowed money. His statement in Sanskrit is very beautiful. The statement says, no one who has gone beyond death has ever come back. It is enough proof, more than enough, that death is the end. And if death is the end, then why be worried about small things? It may be your own pocket or somebody else's pocket. It does not matter. Death will not differentiate between the sinner and the saint. There is no one to make the judgment. Ranam kratva ghritam tivet. Even if you have to borrow money, borrow it, but drink refined butter. Don't be worried about tomorrow. It was a great school, not only in India, but in Greece also, because these were the two countries at that time touching to the peaks of civilization. In Greece there was a great man, Epicurus, and he has still a small following, but generally the whole Western world is Epicurean. They may know not. Epicurus' whole teaching was that all is matter, and when all matter disintegrates, nothing is left behind. So don't bother about any spirituality, and don't bother about any other world. There is none. Not a single witness . It is certainly a tremendous argument that there is not a single witness of the other world, the paradise. It seems to be all fancy imagination, with fulfillment. What you cannot get here, you project, you will get it after life. It gives a certain consolation. But what can you contemplate? Even if you contemplate that everything is impermanent, that simply means do it quick, be speedy. Things are running fast out of hand. Squeeze the juice of every moment without delay. Contemplation can take you into an atheistic worldview. Those who are born must inevitably die. Even the young are not exempt. Just because everyone is going to die, Thoreau and similar teachers think that it is enough for people to become detached because everything is going to die. The result is just the contrary. Because everything is going to die, be quick before it dies. A man was brought in a court in France making love to a woman on the sea beach. The charge was that he was making love to a dead woman. The magistrate asked him, "What do you have to say?" He said, "I thought she is an English lady." man has been told by these teachers, everything is strong, is in danger. Even a long life does not last more than 80 years or so. The desire is that you will think that everything is so changing. What is the point to go after it? That's what Torrey is thinking. But he is absolutely blind of the fact that the more people think things are going to change, the increase their speed. Why humanity has been increasing speed? I have heard a newly wed couple in a fresh new Ferrari is rushing. The girl feels afraid because the car is going 150 miles per hour. She's trembling and she asks the man, please at least look at the map. The man says, who bothers about the man? Is not to enjoy the speed itself. Somewhere we must reach. It cannot be nowhere. You can consult the map. I am enjoying the speed. I don't have any time to waste consulting the map. What is the point? Wherever you reach, we will find a hotel, whether its name is Honeymoon Hotel or not, does not matter. Increasingly, humanity has been interested in speed, more speed. Perhaps you have not taken in consideration the implication. The implication is that do everything as fast and quick as you can, because life is fast. But these people like Torrey thought that if people contemplate that everything is going to die, why love this woman? She is going to die. Not today, then tomorrow, or day after tomorrow. Even if she does not die, she will be in a worse position, she will become old. What is the point in loving a woman who will become old? A man was telling to a woman, I love you. I love you more than my life. The woman said, really? Will you love me always as you love me now? The man contemplated. And he said, there is one problem only. When you become old, will you look like your mother? Then I withdraw my statement. I cannot love your mother. that much is certain. Will you remain the same? Nothing remains the same. From the point of change, two roads, one leads to atheism, materialism, enjoy. There is nothing much to discover. The other road, that because everything is impermanent, try to find something permanent. That is what the masters help the person to find, something in himself that is absolutely eternal. That is the goal of meditation, not of contemplation. But a thinker cannot understand meditation. He cannot understand that you can go out of your mind. How can you jump out of your mind? You are mind. To him, you are nothing more than mind. And you will see his statement. If you don't annihilate the nature of affliction somehow and arrive on the path of liberation, even if you ascend to the rank of sovereign of a nation, great minister, deity, spirit or vizier, it is still evanescent as lightning and morning dew, lasting only for a while. When conditions meet, everything surely seems to exist, but when the conditions disintegrate, emptiness. You are just a certain combination of conditions. When those conditions meet, you are. When those conditions disintegrate, nothingness. A Buddha can also say the same thing, but he says it because he knows nothingness is not nothingness. Because he knows you have entered into your inner sky, which looks to the outsider as nothingness. But when a teacher says this, not knowing anything about it, every danger is there that he will create people who will become materialists. If everything ends, then what is the point of being virtuous? What is the point of prayer? What is the point of donations? What is the point of service to the poor? Why waste time? Just enjoy life, drink, dance, do whatever you want to life, because death will come. And it comes to everyone, the saint and the sinner, in the similar way. It does not make any category. This body is gained through the relationship of father and mother. This type of things can be told only by a teacher. Because everybody knows this body is gained through the relationship of father and mother. And then more stupid things he goes on saying. And comes from their conditions, solidity becomes skin. How solidity can become skin? If I had met this fellow, I have every respect for his learning, but I would put him on task to turn solidity into skin. Or skin into solidity, that will do. Flesh, ligaments, and bone. Fluidity becomes spittle, tears, pus, and blood. Heat becomes warmth and flexibility. Air becomes breath and movement. Great philosophy. And he is talking as if he is stating some scientific discoveries. When these four conditions suddenly are exhausted, the body gets cold and the breath stops. Great contemplation. There is nothing called me. At that time, this body is really not our own. It is only a temporary inn. How can we be so greedily attached to this temporary inn that we ignore eternity? Contemplating these four transcendences, impermanence, suffering, emptiness, selflessness, seeking the way of enlightenment, is called the teaching of four realities for disciples. This is the essential gateway to beginning entry into the way for all enlightened ones. This is the problem with the learned scholarship. They see that the enlightened one shows in his every action non-attachment. Impermanence. Because the enlightened one never suffers in his consciousness, he is beyond suffering. The scholar watches all these qualities from the outside and then he creates his great ideology that if you contemplate on impermanence, non-attachment, suffering, you will enter into the gate of the Buddha. He himself has not entered. These are not the words of a Buddha. These are the words of a great teacher who has collected fragments of teaching from here and there. And he is not honest either. No scholar is. Very difficult to find a scholar to say that what he is saying is not his knowledge. He pretends that what he is saying, he knows. He is saying only because he knows. Every scholar, almost without exception, is a pretender. And because of these pretenders, it becomes very difficult for people to figure out who is the authentic master. Because they speak of the gateway of the Buddha. They speak about the eternity. They speak about the emptiness. Their words are perfectly right, but the man who is speaking them is not right, because these words are borrowed. Once you borrow a truth, it becomes untrue. Truth can arise only within you. It cannot be adopted. You have to remember it. In life you will meet many people who appear to know so much that you are overwhelmed by their knowledge. But inside there is nothing, no experience. A great psychologist head of the department in Varanasi University . I was only a student, but one of my friends has gone from the college to study in Varanasi. He came into contact with the psychologist, Professor Lalji Ram Sukhi. And the professor became so much interested in him that he married his girl to the young man. And the young man was continuously talking about me to him, that you should meet my friend. Continuously mentioning, he became obsessed. He started writing to me that I will pay all the fare and you will stay with me in the university. You come. Just be a guest for 1 week, because I have heard so much about you from my son-in-law that now it is getting a disturbance in me. So I went in the morning near about 25 professors of the university has gathered the professor of psychology Laljidam Sukl was perhaps the only great psychologist in India. People were very much respectful about him. We all waited because he was worshipping the monkey god Hanuman. When his worship was over, he came and he greeted me and he said, I have been waiting. How long you are going to stay? I said, that will be decided within 10 minutes. He said, what do you mean? I said, just sit down. You think you are a psychologist and you worship a monkey? Do you believe in Darwin, that man is born out of the monkey? Perhaps you are worshipping your forefather? He said, this is very insulting. I said, that's why I said, just 10 minutes, that will decide how long I have to stay here. I can stay here my whole life. But I don't think that even 1 hour you will be able to tolerate. I questioned him directly. I said to him, you are worshipping for what? There must be some desire. Some desire perhaps to be the vice chancellor or to be the education minister or to be the prime minister of India. For what you are worshipping? Because a man who has no desire has no need to worship. And do you think a monkey can manage what you cannot manage? Why you are putting yourself into such humiliation before a monkey? He said, don't refer to my God again and again by the name monkey. I said, what can I do? He is a monkey. And it is not a question whether he is your forefather or not. The question is, a psychologist is still primitive. Have you seen God? Those professors who had gathered became very uneasy. They had come to see that some discussion will happen which will be profitable to them. There seems to be no way to discuss with me. Because I said non-essentials aside, just remember the monkey god and tell the truth. Have you ever seen God? He became so angry. He called his son-in-law and told him, "You idiot, you have been harassing me again and again. Now he is disturbing my belief system." I said, "A man of your understanding should not remain with belief systems. He should have something which he knows, not only believes. And you don't have anything that you know. And if you know, just tell me. We can discuss it." What is the point of discussing something which you don't know? The ultimate result was, he told his son-in-law that, "Pack my suitcases and take me immediately to the airport. I don't want a man, in 7 days he will destroy my whole life religiousness." And because all the professors came down to say goodbye to me, he was very angry. Later on, his son-in-law wrote to me that he was so angry with all the professors that you left me alone and you went with him to say goodbye to him. It seems you agree with him. They said, "There is no question of agreement. You misbehaved. If you don't know, you should have said that I don't know. That would have been more dignified. And you have been inviting him. He has not come on his own. And now you have thrown him out of the house." Still he was not angry, he was just laughing. He said, "I knew it. That's why I did not give the time how long I will be here. I know myself. But later on he felt very guilty. And he also felt that how he is going to face all those 25 professors in the university. He wrote to me a letter of apology. I answered him that there is no question of apology. You have not insulted me. You have only insulted yourself. You have been insulting yourself the whole life by your worshipping, by your so-called religiousness, by all kinds of belief systems, and not knowing a single thing. It is good that I accepted your invitation and created a chaos in your mind. Perhaps seeing the chaos, you will come out of the mind And that is the world I had come to discuss with you. The world beyond mind. But for the scholars, mind is all. When all the conditions collapse, Purim is saying nothing remains. This word nothing in the word has a very strange connotation. When a Buddha says nothing, he means no thing. And when a scholar says nothing, he simply means emptiness. When Buddha says nothing, he says there is no thing anymore. Pure space. Utter silence. We all speak the same language. The master has also to use the same language, but he gives new meaning to words, new fragrances to words, new poetry to words. They go dancing into your heart, the same ordinary words with such extraordinary radiance, penetration. But one has to be ignore himself. This gathering is not for those who are interested in studying religion. This gathering is only for those who are interested to experience what religion is all about. It is an experimental, existential lab. It is as scientific as any science. No question of belief. You are not asked what you believe. No question of your mind, whatever kind of mind you have, just put it aside. You may have great learned mind, that is perfectly okay, put it aside. You may have a very ordinary mind, uneducated, no matter. Just put by the side of the great scholar's mind. Mind has no value here. The value arises only when mind is no more there. Then you start growing into a different dimension which can only be called existential. Before we do our meditation, few words from authentic masters, a haiku by Isa. Listen. All creeping things, the bell of transience. nothing to be done. Just listen. Everything is changing. What is the point? The point is that the listener is never changing. The watcher is always there. That is the only permanent thing in existence. Listen or watch. All creeping things, the bell of transience. Now, any scholar can repeat that. There is no problem. The words are very simple. But Isha knows it. Sengai says, what mind do you punctuate? The past, present, or future? The candle is blown out and the diamond turns to ashes. He is saying the same thing. What mind do you punctuate? The past is no more. The future is not yet. And if there is no past and no future, how there can be any present? What time, what mind you punctuate? Neither the mind is there, nor the time is there. When mind and time both disappear, the candle is blown out. That is exactly the meaning of the word nirvana. The candle is blown out. Now, can you find the flame of the candle? Even if you look in the whole universe, you will not find it. It has simply become one with the universe. The moment the candle of mind, which is equivalent to the candle of time, is blown out, utter silence. Nothing is found but tremendous peace. A feeling of coming at home. Manisha has a question. Beloved Bhagwan, can it help to contemplate on a concept? If the concept is just one's intellectual understanding or someone else inside, what is the value? And even if it is out of one's own insight, what is the point? If you have known it, you have known it. Manisha, this is not a question. This is the answer. There is nothing to contemplate and there is nobody to contemplate. When you disappear with all your mind and not even a trace remains behind, just the pure sky, you have found, I will not say what, because the moment you say what you have found, you defile it. It is inexpressible ecstasy. Thousands of Buddhas have tried to bring it down to words, nobody has succeeded. It is just not in the nature of things that ultimate ecstasy can be brought into words. Before we enter into not contemplation, but meditation, I don't want you to be serious. I'm so against seriousness. It is a spiritual sickness. Laughter is spiritual health. And laughter is very unburdening. While you laugh, you can put your mind aside very easily. A man who cannot laugh, the door of the Buddha are closed for him. To me, laughter is one of the greatest values no religion has ever thought about. They have always been insisting on seriousness. And because of their insistence, the whole world is psychologically sick. Hey, listen to this man. Says, star-like butterfly, the aging hippie, passing a reefer to his friend, golden buffalo grass. These guys at Ectoplasm Arcade are offering astral projection tours. Really? Says golden buffalo grass, puffing madly. What does it say? It says, replies butterfly, if you are an average occult freak off the street, you are probably pretty good as popping out of your body and staring at yourself like acid man. You only do it so many times, then you get bored. Would not it be great if you could put your ability to some greater use than just hanging out in nowhere? How about a trip to the divine deep space disco? Or the Big Dipper dance hall? Cuffing on his reefer, butterfly reefs on. Now we introduce astral projection tools. We get you to those far out scenes where the physical body just can't make it. Pop out of your skin bag and cruise to out of sight places and meet strange beings. Astral projection tours offer individual or group tours to 49 Buddhist sky temples and 7 hells of heroics. Experience the mindless wanderings of Baba Ram Rezin space out for fun on Allahu Bend Lens. All for only $20. Wow, man, this is cool. Out buffalo grass, lighting another reefer. This sounds far out. I'm packing right now. I'm gonna drop my body and tune into the cosmos. Hey man, South Butterfly, in a cloud of smoke, where are you going? Going? I'm halfway there. South Buffalo Grass swallowing his reefer and standing on his head, I'm gonna take my astral ass and jog with Jesus, mule ride with Muhammad, and go bowling with Buddha. Big Black Leroy is trying to get religion. So he goes to a holy rollers meeting in a small southern Mississippi town. Sister Sarah, a beautiful and shapely black girl, suddenly leaps to her feet and shouts, "Praise be to the Lord. Last night I was in the arms of Satan, and tonight I'm in the arms of Saint Peter." "Sister," says Leroy quietly as the girl sits down, "so what are you doing tomorrow night?" When Madame Fifi's whorehouse is raided by the police, the whole place is in confusion. Somehow, Pinky, the talking parrot, escapes and flies away. She lands in the graveyard and is immediately captured by the preacher's wife and put in a cage. Polly, wanna a cracker? Asks the preacher's wife as Pinky sits in the cage above the piano, but Pinky says nothing. the day go by and Pinky sits silently in the cage wondering what has happened. One day there is a gathering of the church women's club, and amongst all the girls present, the discussion turns to silk underwear. "Look at this wonderful slip," says Mrs. Jones, turning up the corner of her dress. "Ah, and look at those wonderful panties," says Mrs. Foster, pulling her skirt all the way up. "Thank God," sighs Pinky, eyeing Mrs. Foster. "Welcome home, girls. Anybody got a cigarette?" Better now. Mind you have thrown out. Close your eyes. Feel the body completely frozen. Look inward. At the very center of your being is the door of the Buddha. Deeper and deeper. without any fear, go in as far as you can. You will not meet anybody on the way except yourself. And meeting with oneself is what is the meaning of being a Buddha. One who has encountered himself realized himself has become centered into himself is a Buddha. This is the potential of everyone. Just a little going in the way is very far. From mind to no mind, to make it clear, Nivedana, relax, feel the body to be completely dead. The head has fallen somewhere else, and you are simply a watcher, not a doer, not a thinker, but just a witness. And the evening becomes beautiful. And you will come out completely drunk with the divine. You have to carry this silence, this suchness in every action around the clock. There is no greater ecstasy, no greater blessing than to have found your inner being, the Buddha. This moment you are all Buddhas. This moment you are not separate from each other. It is an ocean of consciousness in which you are all dissolved. Let it sink deep in you that you are not separate from existence. Nivedana, come back, but come back as Buddha. Without without any hesitation, in silence, in grace, in beauty, just sit like Buddhas for a few moments, remembering, collecting the experience you have passed through. Slowly, slowly it is going to become your very heartbeat. That day will be the most fortunate day in your life. Open the
Yes,
sir. Can we celebrate the gathering of the Buddha?
Yes, sir.